Jordan Bird mentioned it a moment ago at practice today. Buda Baker, no. Rudy Ford, no. DJ Humphreys, no. Chad Williams, no. Phil Dawson wasn't seen. Rodney Gunter is still gone after dealing with the unfortunate passing of his father. Kimdichie was back to work. Upati was back to work.
Kimdichie was back to work?
Kimdichie was back to work. Buda, obviously. Buda and DJ are obviously the names that we will really be watching as the week develops. I mean, depth is already pretty sketch on the offensive line to begin with. You take DJ out of the mix, as you know, average as he's been this year, you take him out of the mix, that depth is going to get challenged even more. Then, of course, Buda, that's a big deal. That's a really big deal. So we'll see what his status is later this week. I saw the story this morning. I know you did too, because you sent me the link to it. It was a story from Bill Barnwell about ranking the best and worst potential NFL head coaching openings. And I saw the headline on ESPN.com, and the first thought that went through my head was, I wonder if Steve Wilks is even on this list. Do they put him on it or not? You know, I didn't even, it's funny, I didn't even care, Gambo, about where the Cardinals ranked necessarily.
You just wanted to know if he was on
the list. Want to know if he was on the list.
Yeah.
Does this national guy in Bill Barnwell at ESPN think that it's a potential head coaching opening?
Well, he's had a story ranking the best and worst potential NFL head coach openings. He did it from 1 to 10. So let's start from the bottom, because I think that's what you would consider the best opening, right?
Yes.
He's got the best opening potentially as the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
Because of, you know, a lot of the strength being Aaron Rodgers.
Number 12, absolutely.
The second best opening, this is just based on what jobs could be open. He's got the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
Biggest strength is a patient ownership group. He's got the Seattle Seahawks as number 3 with the biggest strength, a franchise quarterback. Although I didn't think of Pete Carroll as a guy who would be
fired. Well, he's going to get fired, but he's a guy who might decide he's going to retire if this season doesn't go very well for him. Big game for them, by the way, tonight, Seattle and Green Bay.
The losers out.
Basically an elimination game.
Losers out.
In the NFC playoff race, yeah.
Detroit Lions, number 4, franchise quarterback listed as their biggest strength. Number 5, the Cleveland Browns. Roster talent as the biggest strength. Number 6, the Jets. Cap space is the biggest strength. Number 7, they have is the Broncos, and they have roster talent as the biggest strength. Number 8, the Cowboys, roster talent is the biggest strength. Ownership meddling is the biggest weakness. Number 9, Tampa Bay, biggest strength is cap flexibility. Biggest weakness is quarterback situation. And number 10, what they would rate as the least
desirable
job.
Potential opening.
The Arizona Cardinals. Biggest weakness, roster talent. Biggest strength, ownership stability. Says the Cardinals might be in line for a reboot. Bidwell family has traditionally been conservative with coaches, as every single Cardinals coach since the family took over sole ownership has been given a minimum of 2 years to prove their worth. I would guess that Steve Wilks, who is at 2-7 in his first year as coach, won't be the first one to break that trend. So they're guessing that he's not going to break the trend, but does list the Cardinals as, you know, as number 10 on that list of attractive jobs.
So, I mean, yes, it's, although just real quick, going back to that list, and I was going to interrupt you, but I wanted you to finish the list. Matt Patricia, I wasn't thinking of him potentially as a one and done guy, but they had the Lions job listed as the 4th potential best job that might come available.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking of Matt Patricia as a one-and-done guy in Detroit. But, you know, he had the issues right before he was hired, right before training camp started. The team hasn't been very good. There's such a stigma, and rightfully so, about one-and-done firings. I think a lot of teams would really just as soon avoid it if they possibly can. But I also think that if you, like you've said many times, like many have said many times, man, if you've got the wrong guy, get him out.
Get him, yeah. You
get him out. You cannot wait on that. Because the worst mistake you can do is go into next season with your first-year head coach already on a hot seat. You get off to a bad start. And at the bye of year 2, you wish you had fired him after year 1.
Right.
That's the worst thing you can do.
You just wasted a year.
You just wasted another year.
Now, Patricia's interesting because it says Patricia might not be cut out for this. The Lions hired him in February, but months later it was revealed that he had been previously indicted on sexual assault charges in 1996. He denied the charge. The case never went to trial, but he also failed to tell the Lions about the indictment. So that could be hanging over his head right now.
It could be.
If they struggle, if they finish really poorly, they might just axe him.
I don't know what the Cardinals are going to do. I think a lot of it depends on I think most of it, frankly, depends on how they finish these final, seven games they have left on the season. They played hard against Kansas City, but they lost. They're going to lose a lot of games in the second half of the season. Do they play hard in all of those games, or does this team start to tune them out? Does this team start to roll over and have their tummies scratched in these games? I don't know. I think that will, in part, determine a lot of the fate of Steve Wilks. I think the numbers you had earlier in the show about how defensively they've played so far this year, if they get to the end of the year and defensively they're playing pretty well, since that's his area of expertise, they might be inclined to keep him. I think
I would really work if I do think that he's got to improve that rush defense, which is 29th. Last year it was 6th. That's the big disparity between last year and this year, is the inability to stop the run. Byron Leftwich calling the plays. If the team could have more sustained drives, keep the defense off the field, that will help with that. But overall, I think that's what they need to do. They need to stop the run a little bit more. Oakland should be a team you could stop the run against, I would figure. So that might help. You might be able to boost that number up a little bit. But you want to try to get it inside of 20 if you can these last seven games, 18th, 19th, 20th.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get it up to top 10. I mean, you're not. Too much season is gone to get it top 10. But if you can move that up a little bit so you're not in that bottom third, that'd be good.
And the other thing, too, is if Byron Leftwich does a real nice job with Josh Rosen over these last seven games or so, and the defense is holding their own, you might want to bring Wilks back, because if you don't, then you're probably going to lose Byron Leftwich, too. You fire Steve Wilks at the end of the year, new coach is going to come in here. A, he's probably going to be an offensive-minded guy anyway.
Yes.
And B, he's going to want his own offensive coordinator.
And Leftwich will be gone.
It's not going to be Byron Leftwich. So a lot of this will depend on how Leftwich does with Rosen. In Barnwell's write-up, man, he ties a lot of Wilks' future to the future of Steve Keim. And we'll get more into this in a little bit. But basically he says, look, the status of Steve Keim is a question mark going into next year. And that if Keim goes, then the new GM is clearly going to want to bring in
his own coach,
which makes perfect sense. I just don't think Steve Keim is going anywhere.
I don't think
he has one bad year. Is.
I think next year is a big year for him. I mean, he came into this season, wins as a GM, top five. They had won 49 games over 5 years. That put him top five out of all GMs in the league. They've had a bad year. And he's made some mistakes, personal and on the field, too. But I don't think that Michael Bidwell would axe him after one bad year. I just don't think he would. He just signed a new contract extension. He's got a new contract extension. So it doesn't make sense. He's been a good GM. He's been a quality GM. And we'll go over some of the numbers later and just show you, if people that question the drafting and stuff like that, we'll just show you where he ranks with everybody else to understand it. But I would say you got to give him one more year to try to – he got the quarterback.
Yeah.
Got to give him one more year to see if he can fix it.
I just think there's a tighter bond between Michael and Steve Keim than the kind that would allow Michael to fire Steve Keim after this year. Maybe I'm misreading the putt. I just think that
if there was three bad years in a row,
yeah, then maybe you'd be more inclined to think. But
this is the first time they're having a bad year.
But if you're basing if Bill Barnwell is basing his Steve Wilks argument on the future of Steve Keim, I don't think that's the right foundation to base that off of. I don't think it's the right argument to make for getting rid of Steve Wilks, tying it to the future of Steve Keim. Then, and I know we're out of time. Do you think the Cardinals are the 10th best potential job available? At the bottom of this list, as
no.
Barnwell has them?
No, I would say they're much better than a lot of those jobs.
Who do you have them higher than, the Bucs?
I would have them higher than Tampa Bay. I'd have them higher than Detroit. You know, I mean, Stafford is, he's a franchise quarterback. He doesn't win anything. I mean, he's one of those, you know, you're kind of stuck with it. you know, you. I mean, let me go with your point. The Jets. The Jets are always a mess.
Jets are always a mess.
Like it's not as like the Giants are stable. The Jets aren't. The Jets are never stable. I mean, I like the fact you got Sam Darnold there, but yeah. I mean, I'm not saying the Cardinals are number one or number two on that list. There are other jobs that are much better than the Cardinals, but they're probably in the middle of that list, I would say.
Tomorrow, we're going to be on the road at the Safeway. Hayden and Chaparral in Scottsdale. Francis Ford Coppola Wines will be on site with us, giving you the chance to win tickets to the Territorial Cup in Tucson, hotel and cash included, plus complimentary engraving for your purchase of a bottle. Again, visit the events page tomorrow at arizonasports.com. We are going to be at the Safeway, Hayden and Chaparral in Scottsdale tomorrow. He was inserted into the Suns starting five out of necessity after last night. Is Mikal Bridges going to hold on real tight to that starting job? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo Show, not inside the Auction Community Studios today. We are on the road, 75th Avenue and Encanto. Just had another gentleman drop off a few bucks to help us with our Holiday Heroes event coming up in just a few weeks. So you can come on down and make a donation to the 100 Club of Arizona Holiday Heroes. And had a couple people come down and just make a donation, which we appreciate.
AT&T is a proud partner of our Holiday Heroes broadcast this year, which is coming up in just a few weeks. It's benefiting the 100 Club of Arizona, as Gambo mentioned, providing financial relief to the families of injured or fallen first responders, near and dear to our heart. And as always, we appreciate all of the listeners of the Burns and Gambo Show and 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station for being a part of that. And we appreciate AT&T for being a part of that as well. You had the news yesterday about an hour and a half before tip-off last night that due to personal reasons, Trevor Ariza would not be playing for the Suns last night. I know your Twitter feed was filled with people who were wondering if he had been bought out or if he had been traded. No, he's not been bought out. It's impossible to trade him. He's not.
Not until December 15th.
Right. So they
can't trade him.
There's no scenario where right now today he's not on this roster, so that's not what it is. And we speculated in the moment, can Mikal Bridges play well enough to make us all want to see him start even when Trevor Ariza comes back?
I'll tell you, the excitement level when we came up with that, it wasn't nothing against Trevor Ariza. It was more for Mikal Bridges. The excitement level that I was receiving on my Twitter feed, you can follow me at Gambo987. We get a lot of news out there, a lot of information, was tremendous. People were genuinely excited to see, because they've seen glimpses of Mikal Bridges. And anybody that watches basketball knows basketball. Like, he can help. Like, he's good. Played 4 years in college, won two championships, played for a great coach. Like, this is a guy that I think everybody felt. There was nobody like, oh, man, that sucks that Trevor's not going to be there. I didn't get one person that was like, oh, that stinks that Trevor's not going to be there. Everybody was like, yeah, all right, we get to see Mikal Bridges play.
Yep.
This kid's going to be good. So he got a chance to play last night. He got a chance to start, and he did a great job. He did a really good job. Didn't get a lot of shots. Didn't make the shots, you know, a bunch of the shots that he made. But what he gives you, that was tremendous last night, was defense.
Mm-hmm.
He did a really good job defensively. Team defense, which goes unnoticed, and you don't get the stats with that. Team defender. Ability to switch. Ability to cover different guys. Length to make guys get rid of the basketball. If you just watched him and the way he was playing in his 25 minutes, shot 4 of 6 from the field, scored 8 points, had a couple of rebounds. But I thought it was his team defense that was really good. That's a guy that was in the right place at the right time. Okay, communicated very well. You didn't see him out. You didn't see his guy blow by him for a dunk. You didn't see his guy blow by him for a layup. You didn't see him get lost on a switch and not know where to go. Smart basketball IQ. I thought that's what he brought to the table last night.
Only 8 points, as you mentioned, but when he was on the floor, the Suns were a plus 23
right
in last night's game, which speaks to kind of what you're talking about with the defense and some of the bigger picture things that he was doing out there. But more than that, I mean, look, this is a team that, especially recently, they've been coming out in these first quarters and they're just laying eggs, right? I mean, they're just getting blown out. They're not competitive. There's no energy. There's no juice early on. I think the stat I read that the Suns were the worst first quarter team in the NBA on average, getting outscored by about 5 points in the first quarter. But anybody who's watched this team knows it's been a lot worse than that lately, where they're just down by 20, seemingly, at the end of one. They came out in the first quarter and they took a 34-19 lead. And it was...
And I never looked back.
And again, is this all because of Bridges and not a reason? No. It's not all because of that, but it seems to me that there's sort of a ride the hot hand theory you have to have here. If you're Igor Kokoschkov, ride the hot hand. When you get Ariza back, start Bridges again and see if you start games like that again. Why not? At this point, what do you have to lose?
If your plan, and it shouldn't, if your plan is to trade Trevor Ariza, I mean, people know what Trevor Ariza is. You don't need to showcase him.
Nope.
This isn't Alex Len, Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris. This is Trevor Ariza. The guy's been in the league for 15 years. He's won a championship, for goodness sakes. People know what he is. You don't need to play him. Hey, listen, we're going with Mikal Bridges. He's part of our future. And he gives them, I'll tell you, you know, okay, so Booker, Ayton, and Bridges as part of the big three. And then T.J. Warren, right? T.J. Warren's right there, too. Like, don't underestimate how good T.J. Warren is. So that's four. Josh Jackson, still don't know, but I want to see.
Played a good game last night. Took a lot of shots, but played a good game last night.
He shoots the ball too much.
He had open shots, though, so don't mind him taking the open ones. He had that little floater working. Did you notice that? He got in the lane a couple times and put up that little five-foot floater.
And you know what he's also good at instead of the floater? The lob to DeAndre Ayton.
He has that down. But
he
also
had like three of those last
defensively,
night.
Defensively, he had the running block as well in the third quarter. So we saw him a little bit on that end of the floor. Igor Kokoschkov says, look, when it comes to guys coming off the bench, we have to be flexible in those moments when it comes to something like that.
Every game, every matchup, every situation requires our reaction on the bench. And that's what we got to shake up and kind of a little bit shuffle cards when it comes to rotation and substitution pattern. So that's why we don't have a standard rotations when it comes to the games. A lot of teams, they know. You know when the team guy's coming out, but we have to be more flexible when it comes to the substitution.
Yeah, I would agree with you, though. I mean, a few too many shots for Josh Jackson. The ball tends to stick with him a little bit,
came
right?
Off the bench, he had the third most shots on the team. He took 13 shots. You know how many shots Devin Booker took in 37 minutes? 14 shots. Josh Jackson, in 21 minutes, took 13 shots, one less. He took one less shot than Devin Booker. He took more shots than DeAndre Ayton. That's the one thing about Josh. And I know guys have told him this, but just work on being a great defender. Just work on being a great defender. But he wants to score.
Sure.
He wants to be a scorer. He figures that he needs to score in order to start. I'm going to score. And I think that's really hurting him. I do. Because I think if he just concentrated on defending, 1, 2, 3, 4, concentrated on shutting those guys down, I think he could really make an impact on this team. But he does like to shoot the basketball.
No word on when Ariza is going to be back. The next game is, Saturday against Oklahoma City. And again, we wish no ill will towards Ariza. I don't know what it was in his family life or in his personal life that caused him to miss yesterday's game. Nobody's celebrating that or reveling in that. But at this point, based off of what I saw last night and looking at the metrics, and I'm not a big, you know, analytics guy, at least when it comes to the NBA, I'm not. But in looking at some of the numbers of how efficient the Suns are offensively and defensively, when Booker, Ayton, and Bridges are on the floor together, there's nothing to think about if you're the Suns. Start Mikal Bridges. There's nothing to think about.
Because he can make an impact. I love guys that can make an impact without having to shoot the ball 10-plus times. And Bridges is one of those guys. He doesn't have to shoot the ball. He can make impacts in other ways. Smart basketball player, smart IQ, good defensively. I mean, there's a lot to like about Mikal Bridges. And you like what you said. I mean, he had a plus minus of 23 when he was on the court. He made an impact.
His misses are beginning to outweigh his hits. But Steve Keim's not the only one. We'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Thursday afternoon edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. You just heard Jordan Bird mention the Cardinals injury status. We'll know more later in the day who officially was listed as limited, who officially was listed as out. A lot of questions on that offensive line. Upati was back today, but DJ Humphries, according to the open part of practice anyway, was on the side. There continues to be, Gambo, a lot of conversation about the Cardinals' offensive line, what they're going to do about the offensive line, assuming that there are going to be offensive linemen who are drafted this year.
And free agents, too. Sure.
And any conversation that we have about the Cards' offensive line,
unfortunately for Steve Keim, sort of requires us to reflect on some of the decisions that he has made as general manager on the offensive line. Because it's not, as we've said many times, it's not for a lack of trying.
Yeah.
They have thrown money at the problem. They have signed high-dollar free agents.
Some have worked.
Some have worked. Some haven't.
Some have worked for a couple of years and then didn't work for the last couple of years.
Right.
They're gonna scout that kid at Bama. I'm expecting that they're going to go look at that Jonah Williams. He could be a top-five pick. The Alabama tackle, that kid's just a beast. So they may look that way. There are free agents available that they could get. I wouldn't go after Ramon Foster. I think he's a little long in the tooth. I don't know that he's got much left. But Roger Saffold is a good guard. The kid Andy Levitre, he's a good guard. I wouldn't go after Ramon Foster. I just think that he's wearing down at this point right now. So they will sign a free agent, and they will draft at least one player, maybe more, and they'll get some new guys on this offensive line. Like I told you, they're going to bring back A.Q. Shipley. They're going to bring back Mason Cole. They're going to bring back Justin Pugh. They're going to hold on to DJ Humphreys for another year and see. You know, but they're not going to pay. Like, if he's expected to get $15 million, I doubt they're going to give that to him.
It's funny. You look at the Pro Football Focus rankings for DJ Humphreys, and, yeah, they have him as the 31st best tackle in the NFL, kind of a composite rating of how he does against the pass, how he does against the run. They list him as an average tackle.
That's what he is.
Based off of his grade. He's an average tackle, which I don't know if that's good enough to be able to say, you know, let's pay him to keep him around longer.
Right.
I think he still has a lot more to prove. But at the end of the day, this kind of comes back to a Steve Keim conversation. He's drafted 9 offensive linemen since he's been the general manager. Only 3 of them are still with the organization. DJ Humphreys, Mason Cole, and Corey Cunningham. Cole and Cunningham were just taken in this last year's draft. And DJ Humphreys, who knows what his status is going to be a year from now, a year and a half from now, when next season ends. He signed Veldier. He signed Upati. He signed Pugh. He signed Andre Smith. He has signed guys who have had a history of injuries like Pugh, and they have kind of predictably broken down. Guys like Upati, very good the first couple of years. He's broken down the last couple of years. Veldier was a really good signing. There's a lot of people who are worried about Steve Keim and his ability to evaluate offensive linemen, knowing that that is going to be the primary function he's going to have this offseason, is to rebuild that offensive line.
Listen, it's a legitimate concern. But to be honest with you, it's also a concern that most fan bases in the NFL have about their own GM and their team. I was looking at something today that was put out there, and it was the draft pick. And here's what teams with the This was on, I believe it was on ESPN. I sent it to you, but I think it was on ESPN. Teams with the least draft picks still playing in the NFL.
It was on Twitter. It was from a guy named Jason who works for OverTheCap.com.
Oh, Jason OverTheCap.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's a really good follow on Twitter. OverTheCap kind of deals with cap issues for the NFL. And he tweeted out, teams with the least amount of draft picks still playing in the NFL.
He mentioned 7 teams. Now, I'm clearly thinking, in my mind, I'm clearly thinking, based on how much we've talked about Cardinals draft picks not making it, that the Cardinals are going to be like number 1, 2, or 3 on this list. Okay? So let me give you a list. Here's 7 teams. Teams with the least draft picks still playing in the NFL. Number 1, the Giants.
Okay.
Number 2, the Jets. Number 3, the Falcons. Number 4, the Chargers.
Falcons and the Chargers are tied.
Okay, they're tied. Number 5, the Titans. Then the Bears. Then the Saints. You know what's missing in that category?
Cardinals.
The Cardinals aren't in there. Again, let me say it. Teams with the least amount of draft picks still playing in the NFL. Giants, Jets, Falcons, Chargers, Titans, Bears, Saints. Cardinals are not on that list.
No, and make sure we understand, we're not talking about still playing with the team that drafted them. We're just talking about still being in the NFL.
Right.
Right? Cardinals are not among the 7 worst teams in that regard.
So where are they? So a little research here. Steve Keim's had 42 draft picks. 18 are still on the Cardinals right now. 42.9% are still on the Cardinals. 18 out of 42. That's 42.9%. That rate falls in the middle of the league. And 28 of those guys out of 42 are still in the NFL, which is 66%. So 66% of the guys he drafted are still in the NFL out of his 42 picks. He's in the middle of the league. He's right in the middle. Not at the bottom. He's not in the bottom third. He's in the middle. For players that he drafted that are still on the team, and for players that he drafted that are still in the league, he's actually a little bit higher than that. So there has been draft failures. There's been some draft successes, too, let's be honest. But there has been draft failures, and we tend to talk a lot about the draft failures. I'm just saying, and they're there. They're real. But they're not alone. A lot of teams are having a hard time evaluating players these days. It's difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult to do, and a lot of teams are failing at evaluating the players.
NFL insider Albert Breer was on the Bickley and Murata show. This was about a month ago or so, three weeks ago, and said, look, I still believe in Steve Keim as a talent evaluator in this league.
I think he's one of the best evaluators in football. On balance, you look at the job that he has done. In all of his years there, one of the more respected guys, if you talk to the road scouts who are really his peers and have been his peers as he was coming up, he's in a slump. I think that's the best way to put it. You look at some of the first-round picks, it's on Reddick, Deion Buchanan. Like, there's a number of guys that haven't lived up to their billing. DJ Humphreys. I look at their recent draft history isn't very good. Now, what I would say is that he had a big hand in what was happening not only last 6 years, but the time before that, too.
Sure.
He was sort of the primary evaluator when Rod Graves was the GM. And we've seen these ups and downs before. I think every single team in the league, every single GM in the league goes through ups and downs.
And that slump that Albert Breer is talking about was kind of highlighted in another story on ESPN, one that we talked about earlier from Bill Barnwell, in which he talked about kind of Steve Wilkes' future and how it's tied to Steve Keim's. And he pointed out that when Deion Buchanan, assuming Deion Buchanan leaves this offseason, the Cardinals will not have a single player left on their roster from the 2013 and 2014 drafts. The 2015 draft was better. The Cardinals have not found a single viable starter from the 2016 draft. That was the Robert Kimdichie, Brandon Williams draft, but also the one
TJ Logan,
where they took their second round pick
and traded for
Chandler Jones. So you always have to incorporate that when talking about that 2016 draft. It would be fair to do otherwise. If Steve Keim is in a drafting slump, and I think that's a good way of putting it, is it the 2017 draft haul, Rosen, Kirk, Cole, and Chase Edmonds, that will break him out of that slump? Is that?
I think it's a good draft
class. Is that the class that
Kirk's a stud?
A year from now, we can look back and go, yeah, he was in a 2 or 3 year slump in terms of evaluating talent, but boy, he knocked it out of the park with that one. I don't know. We'll see.
The David Johnson draft is a good draft. This draft appears to be a good draft. It does. You get 2 or 3 in a row, and all of a sudden you got a good football team. That's just the reality. You get 2, 3 good drafts in a row, well, you're getting 4 or 5 players that can help because the roster turnover is so great. I mean, every team could go back and say the same thing. How many teams in the league from 2013 still have draft picks? There are some teams that don't have any. I mean, the Cardinals are not alone here.
Where I do think the criticism is fair.
Is offensive line.
Specifically,
totally.
Yes.
Totally agree.
I agree.
Offensive line, it's just...
He's got to do better.
Yes. Totally agree.
He's got to do better than what he's done.
Yeah.
And if we're having a conversation specific to that position, I think the criticism is warranted. If we're just talking about in general, Steve Keim as a drafter, I think, like you say, he's right in the middle. There's guys who have done a lot worse, guys who have done better, but he hasn't been so egregiously bad that he shouldn't have that job anymore.
And that's why they've had no. I think he definitely comes back for another year. You give him an opportunity. It's just his one bad year. He has done a good job with free agents with offensive linemen. Veldia worked out. Upati worked out. So some of the free agents they went out and got did end up helping the team. But it'd be nice to land a really good stud in the draft.
Come watch the ASU Oregon game with Arizona Sports this Saturday at the Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers on Higley and Queen Creek in Gilbert. Giving away ASU gear, tickets to the Territorial Cup in Tucson, and other great prizes from Coors Light. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details. The suspension is over. Everybody's back. Are the Warriors going to be able to play nice with each other from now on? That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Steve Kerr, says, we shall overcome this.
We met in the locker room before practice and went through our usual game day routine, addressed some things and that will remain private. And I know Kevin and Draymond have spoken. And, you know, that's as much as I'm going to reveal. I can tell you that I am extremely confident in this team's ability to get through any adversity.
We shall see. He's probably right.
We shall see. I don't know.
But I don't know. I can't say for sure.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there are a lot of guys that have played together. Shaq and Kobe didn't like each other.
Nope.
Okay? I mean, they didn't like each other. There's been plenty of guys that have played together that were great and didn't really like each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think for a time MJ and Pippen didn't get along. I don't think there was a time when Bird and McHale didn't get along. So it happens all the time that two great players, two really good players, one great and one really good, however you want to phrase it, can be at odds with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as their goal is still the same, I don't care how much I hate you, I want to win. You can help me win.
Well, I mean, when you're as good at what you do as those guys are, you know, you tend to put aside those differences when it matters the most. Now, does this mean that, you know, Kevin Durant and Draymond Green are going to go out for lunch together? No, probably not. Does this mean they're going to hang out together after games, go get beers together, or do whatever it is that NBA players do? No, probably not. But it does mean that in the time that they are required to be around each other, they will do whatever they can to put it behind them and just focus on the task at hand, and that's winning basketball games. I'm reasonably sure that'll happen, but, you know, given how tenuous all of this is, I mean, Durant, who knows who he's going to be playing for a year from now? Who knows who Draymond Green's going to be playing for a year from now? He's a free agent, too. Given all that, and what obviously is resentment in that locker room towards Kevin Durant.
Sure.
Obviously it exists. I don't think it's a guarantee that it goes away.
Here's Sports Illustrated, five scenarios that could affect Kevin Durant. Number one, everyone moves on and continues winning titles. They think that's the number one scenario. Everyone moves on. Number two, Durant to the Knicks. This is, amazingly, the second most likely scenario in play. Durant's Knicks buzz has been percolating around the league since June. In September, a league source told SI that the wheels for a New York move were already in motion in much the same way LeBron's L.A. move had been scripted well before July of 2018.
Wow. We're comparing Durant to the Knicks like LeBron to the Lakers?
There are plenty of reasons to be skeptical of that claim, namely the Knicks haven't signed an all-NBA superstar in 30 years. Now, that's the number two scenario. Number three, trade Draymond. And the Sports Illustrated writer says, I wrote about this in August when I predicted a fissure, F-I-S-S-U-R-E?
Fissure. Like a split.
Between Durant and Draymond, and wondered whether Golden State may move Green as a show of long-term support for Durant. If KD is seeking a new story and a new challenge, breaking up the original nucleus and attempting to continue dominating anyway could give him exactly what he needs. And then number four, Durant to the Clippers. This is the more successful older sibling of Durant's Knicks rumors. And then number five, Durant to the Lakers. Don't count out the Lakers. It's really easy to count out Durant Laker rumors, but maybe it's too easy. So those are the five scenarios. Clippers, Lakers, Knicks, trade Draymond, or just stay together and win a championship.
I didn't realize that. First of all, I love it when you learn new words on the show.
I never saw that word before in my life.
I love it when
the... For sure? Is it Fisher?
Fisher.
And it's Fisher. Not Fisher.
No, it's not. It's not Fisher. It's Fisher.
Never heard of the word ever.
Yeah, it's like
swear I've never
it's
heard.
Like in the ground, how you know there's like a crack in the ground. That's a fissure. It's like a split. A divide.
Win games on the field, not in the press conference. Stop talking. I mean, that's really what came out of it for me. The hyperbole of Todd Graham.
You want to know the truth?
I do.
I never knew what that word was either until I read it. I'd never heard that word before. So when I read hyperbole, that's what I to me it looked like hyperbole.
I've
never used it, and I had never heard it before.
I've always given you credit for that one.
Yeah.
To just look at that word, it does look like hyperbole.
Well, I never heard anybody say
it. It does not look like hyperbole.
Hyperbole. I never heard anybody say that before.
It does look like hyperbole.
Listen, I didn't grow up around a lot of educated people either, okay? I wasn't the only one. You think Frankie, Joey, Rocco, Carmine, you think these guys were smart?
I don't think they knew what a Fisher was.
You think anybody, like, our teachers didn't care. They were teaching a bunch of Italian kids from immigrant families. Like, they just wanted to be able to, can you read a little bit and write? They were happy.
They just wanted to get you cannolis out of their classroom, right?
Listen, that's the, exactly. Get the cannolis out of the classroom.
Get out of my classroom.
There was no desire to make any of us really smart. None of us really went on to have any great education or anything like that. The teachers in my area were just trying to get the Italian immigrant kids out of high school, well, being able to read and write.
It's a good thing for all of us that you've been so successful despite your limited vocabulary, because you've got all this money to give away to our audience here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Look, not for nothing. I love money. Don Money.
Eddie Money.
Norm Cash.
Dave Cash.
Cameron Dalla.
Swin Cash.
Johnny Cash.
Brad Penny. Buck Showalter.
Gambo's Super Trivia Cash Contest, the 3 o'clock hour. We had a winner in the 2 o'clock hour, and Mari was her name, Mari. She won $250, so we're still at $250 in the 3 o'clock hour. I need caller number 9 at 602-260-9870.
Do we have any athletes with, like, nickel or dime in their names? I mean, let's see if they've missed anybody. Any athletes that have nickel or dime?
We'll work on that.
That Bicklin or Murata missed?
602-260-9870 is the telephone number. $250 is on the line. If we do not get a correct answer in this hour, it will double in the 4 o'clock hour and be $500 on the line. Let's go out to Michael, as he is on the Burns and Gambo Show, and he is the 3 o'clock hour contestant for Gambo's Super Trivia Cash Contest. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Good to have you on the show. We wish you the best of luck. Gambo's going to read you a question. At the end of the question, when he's done reading it, you're going to have 24 seconds to answer it. You can take all the 24 seconds you need, but when you give us an answer, well, we're going to need an answer after 24 seconds. You got it?
Perfect.
All right.
Michael, here is your question. The last Final Four appearance for the University of Arizona, the basketball program, was the 2000-2001 season. Which team defeated the Wildcats in the national championship game that year? You're on the clock. The last Final Four appearance for the University of Arizona basketball program, 2000-2001. Which team defeated them in the national championship game?
Take your time, Michael. You have about 10 seconds left. And the buzzer will sound, and we'll need your answer immediately.
All right. I want to say Duke.
Duke it is!
Duke
is Duke. Duke beat U of A 82-72 in the 2001 National Championship game. Congratulations, Michael.
You can buy America's Greatest Hit album right now.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Sister Golden Hair.
Set to the techno version of Sister Golden Hair in the background.
Been through the desert on a horse with no name.
Michael, stay on the line. We're going to get in your information. We're going to get you paid. Since that championship game, Arizona has lost in the Elite Eight 5 times since 2001. That was their last Final Four appearance.
It was the year the Diamondbacks won the World Series?
Yeah, it was the year the Duke Blue Devils beat them that spring. Mm-hmm. So, we're at $250. Sometime in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to give out $250 of Gambo's money.
My cash away.
Absolutely, we are. Michael, congratulations to you for being the big, big winner on the Burns and Gambo Show. When we come back, it was, without question, their best performance of the season. Can last night's win provide a spark for the Suns moving forward? Dive into that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.